Now, sometimes you could get periodic artifacts, such as the grid artifact I showed earlier. Periodic components in images will give rise to impulse-like and periodic concentrations of energy in the spectrum. This is because when you have a periodic signal, the Fourier transform becomes a Fourier series, and you will have energy or frequency components only at the fundamental frequency of the periodic signal and its multiples, that is, harmonics. The same happens in images, and because of the concentration of energy around the fundamental and the harmonics of the fundamental frequency, you will see impulse-like concentrations of energy in the frequency domain. And there could be other parts of the image that are not periodic, so there will be the other components spread around the spectrum as usual. So this characteristic facilitates the identification of periodic artifacts. So in the spectrum, if you see isolated points of concentrated energy, and if they are equally spaced in at least one dimension, U or V axis, that means there is a periodic artifact or a periodic component present in the signal, in the image. It could be a real component of the signal or the image, or it could be a periodic artifact. If you want to reject those, you can use what is called a band reject notch filter or a comb filter. In one-dimensional signal processing, a notch filter is one where you remove a particular frequency component by setting the gain for that component to be zero or reducing the gain for that component. Now, if there are multiple components you want to remove because of periodic artifacts having energy at the fundamental frequency of the periodicity and harmonics or integral multiples, then you must remove all of them by punching holes and setting all of them to zero or reducing the gain for those frequency components. Then it is called a comb filter because you have something like a comb that you use to push down these values to low gain. Now, removing the artifactual components leads to the loss of frequency components in the desired image also. If you set all of those components to zero, the real image components at those frequencies are also removed. So instead of setting them to zero, you may want to do something else, such as interpolation. But that assumes something else, that the image, the spectrum of the original image is smooth. That's a common assumption made. But if you set these values to zero, you are removing the components of the true signal in the image also. And that could lead to some distortion in the filtered image. So there is always a price to pay. So here is an example of the image with the periodic artifact, which is the shadow of the grid. Here, the grid was held stationary during exposure of this phantom, which I mentioned earlier is a phantom for mammography. But this is an artificial situation created. The spectrum of this image is shown here, where you have impulse-like concentrations at these frequencies. Because the grid pattern is horizontal, and each pattern here within the periodic pattern is a straight line of negligible thickness, the Fourier transform of one line here would have components only along the vertical axis. And because that is periodic, you have components only at multiples of the fundamental frequency. So these impulse-like concentrations of energy are due to the periodic artifact. And that periodic artifact is parallel to the horizontal axis. So those components are only along the vertical axis. Now, because of smoothing and convolution and some other effects, you see some spreading of these components. And that's because of the finite size of the image and computational aspects. So what I did was, at these points, or these in these regions where you see black bands, I set the spectrum to be equal to zero. Now, that's not the best filter, but I simply did that and took the inverse Fourier transform, and that gave me this result, where the periodic pattern is certainly removed, and these calcifications are seen better than there. The calcifications are obvious there too, but the artifact is predominant. And that artifact has been removed by filtering these bands. You don't have to do this kind of filtering. You could simply remove these little zones where you have high energy. You cannot remove this component because then you will lose the brightness information. So the Fourier transform of the grid pattern existing at this point, 00 frequency and surrounding region, remains in the output. There are other ways of filtering, as I said, just removing regions here that might give you a different answer, different output image. But this is one way of suppressing periodic artifact, and periodic artifacts would give you an appearance of this nature of isolated peaks separated by the fundamental frequency and its multiples. Now, if the grid had functioned properly, this would be the image I showed earlier. And the spectrum of the image is this, where you don't see the artifact, of course. Okay. We represented the image as an array, FMN. We represented the Fourier transform as an array, FUV. Now, there are other possibilities of representation of the image and image processing operations in terms of matrices. I said earlier, when we were talking about sampling and quantization, that the image FMN as a sampled array of values could be seen as a matrix. But all the techniques that we have seen so far processed each element separately using some of these techniques of convolution or mask operation or neighborhood operation. In the design of optimal filters and procedures that require application of differentiation, statistical expectation, and other mathematical operations, it is a bit difficult to maintain the image representation as an array, FMN, M going 0 to M minus 1, N going 0 to N minus 1, and so on, and handling each and every element of the array. The array or single element form representation of the image does not facilitate the optimization procedure. It's not that you cannot do it, but it is not easy. The notation could become cumbersome. The matrix representation of images, convolution, filters, and transforms facilitates efficient and compact representation of image processing operations and also facilitates the application of optimization and estimation techniques where you can take the derivative of an expression involving multiple images with respect to an entire image. Whereas in the array form, it's a bit difficult to do that. So let's look at matrix representation of images, and then we will look at matrix representation of convolution and transforms. First, let us see how we can write an image as a vector. Now, a vector is also a matrix, just that it is just some number k by 1, one column and a number of rows. Now, suppose you have a sampled image that is an M by N matrix, FMN going M equal to 0, 1, 2, 3, 4, up to M minus 1, N going 0, 1, 2, 3, N minus 1, number of rows and number of columns. So this has M rows and N columns, or M rows each with N elements, and the matrix has N columns. I cautioned earlier that when we talk about matrices, and images as matrices, we need to bear in mind that images are not simply numbers, but there could be a physical connotation of the properties of the image. And these physical properties will impose certain conditions on the matrix. Some basic considerations are that there is non-negativity and an upper bound. The values of the matrix or array FMN must be greater than some minimum value, typically zero, and must be less than some maximum value, and due to quantization, that could be 255. So right away, there are limits on the values, and f min and f max are those values. And let's say the lower limit is zero because you cannot have negative intensity or negative reflectivity or negative density. So the values have to be positive. And there is also finite energy. A real life signal will have finite total energy. So the sum of the squared values of the matrix elements must be less than Emax, where that is some finite limit on the total energy of the signal. There is also a constraint on smoothness. Values within a neighborhood cannot change by more than a certain difference, let us say S, where fmn minus the average of its eight neighbors must be less than that limit. So you cannot have a rapid change or a step change within a small neighborhood. Now, the m by n matrix could be converted into a vector by row ordering by taking the first row and then writing the second row, and then the third row, and then the fourth row, and then so on. So you get a long matrix, long vector, and then you could put a transpose so that it becomes a column vector. Because when you say a vector, it is typically written vertically as a column matrix, but by hand, you would rather write it horizontally, so put a transpose at the end. So each of these parts, Fm, is one row. Fm is the mth row, Fm1, M2, M3, so on, Mn, transpose. So you could, it depends upon how you write it. If you write it in a vertical column, then you put this transpose here. Otherwise, you could also do column ordering. You do one of these. Take the rows and write one after another, or take the first column and then write the second column and then the third column and so on. So in this manner, you convert the m by n matrix into a vector that is of size mn times 1. So all the elements of the image will be arranged in one vertical column. So the image matrix that has these 9 values, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, let's say this is a 3 by 3 image. If you take the first row and write like this, and then the second row, and then the third row, you get the values like this. Or if you take the first column, 1, 4, 7, and then the second column, 2, 5, 8, then the third column, 3, 6, 9, you get that. So as long as you do one of these consistently, it is okay. It doesn't matter which one you do, but you have to make sure that you tell anybody else using the same data that you used row ordering or column ordering. So in this manner, an image is converted into a vector, which is a long column matrix. Using vector notation, then you can express some operations very easily in a very compact format. The total energy, E, we have used E for expectation earlier, but here E is the energy. E is F transpose F, which is F dot F. It's a dot product of F with itself. And that is the square of each element added over the entire image, I going 1 to mn, F square I. Now, this is written as a vector, just Fi. The energy may also be computed using the outer product. If you want to make life a little bit more complicated, you could take FF transpose. Now, F, we said, is mn by 1, or if the image is square, n square by 1. So F transpose is 1 by n square. So 1 by n square multiplied with n square by 1 is a 1 by 1, so it is a scalar. So this is the dot product of the vectors, which is a scalar. But if you take FF transpose, it is n square by 1 times 1 by n square, so it is an n square by n square matrix. So if you have an image that is 1,000 by 1,000 pixels, it's a million by million matrix. Now, that is making life unnecessarily complex, but if you want to do that, you could do so. You get a matrix. And if you want the energy, you take the trace of that matrix, which is sum of the values along the main diagonal. So trace is the sum of the main diagonal elements of the resulting mn by mn or n square by n square matrix. So that is also the energy. So you can take the product of the matrix or array, the vector with itself, either as the dot product or the inner product, or as this, which is the outer product. to get a scalar directly or a matrix and then turn that into a scalar by taking the trace. Now, if the elements of the image, the pixel values, are considered to be random variables, when you are treating the image itself as a random process, then you need to compute certain statistical measures. And those can also be expressed in this notation. The mean of the image, which we can represent as mu f or f bar, is expectation of f, which is an mn by 1 matrix or vector. And here, the mean is taken of the entire image over an ensemble of images. So it is not the mean over the image. It is not the average density of one image, but the result is a matrix or a vector. So f bar is a prototype image representing a class or a population of images of that type. So it is a matrix or vector. The covariance over a population, the expectation requires a population or the PDF. The covariance matrix is written as expectation of F minus F bar times F minus F bar transpose. And if you were to open that up, you get this as expectation F F transpose minus F bar transpose. And let me see, we're making some assumption here. This is an MN by MN matrix where you have the variance of each element along the main diagonal, and then you have the covariances sigma 2 1, sigma 1 2, and so on, sigma 1 P, sigma P 1, sigma 2 P, there, sigma P 2, and so on, of the various elements where P is equal to MN. And the matrix elements are given by this expectation of FP minus F bar P, FQ minus F bar Q, P and Q, each one going 1 to P. So here you have the variance of each element in the matrix of the image and also all possible cross terms and their covariances. So sigma pq is the covariance between the pth and the qth elements of the image vector. Sometimes I say image vector, sometimes I say matrix, but a vector is also a matrix. Sigma is symmetric with sigma pq equal to sigma qp, because in this you can switch the order and it doesn't matter, you get the same thing. The diagonal terms sigma square pp will give you the variances of the elements of the image vector of each one of them. You can get the autocorrelation or scatter matrix phi as expectation FF transpose, which is an MN by MN matrix. And phi will be equal to sigma if the mean is zero, if the mean of F bar, if every element is zero. Then you can normalize the covariance and get this correlation coefficient, or normalized matrix here, I should say, rho pq as sigma pq divided by sigma pp sigma qq. And that will have all the elements between minus 1 and plus 1. The diagonal elements will then be equal to 1 because of normalization, and the rho values will give you this normalized covariance. Then the variation d, the absolute value of this, absolute scale of variation is retained in a diagonal matrix with these values, and sigma is d times rho d with pre and post multiplication of rho. And the autocorrelation phi is equal to covariance sigma if the mean is zero. I think I already said that earlier. So you have these relationships. Now remember that each one is a matrix of size mn by mn, or n square by n square if the image is n by n. Okay, this is the last page. We will stop after this. Now, if there are two image vectors, F and G, they are uncorrelated if expectation of FG transpose is expectation of F, expectation of G transpose. You can separate the product as expectation of each one individually. Then the cross-covariance matrix sigma fg is a diagonal matrix, and the cross-correlation is an identity matrix. They are orthogonal if expectation of f g transpose is zero. If the projection of one onto another is zero, they are orthogonal. This, by the way, is the projection of one vector onto another. They are statistically independent if the joint probability PFG is equal to the product of the individual probability density functions. We have seen that earlier. Now we are just stating the same in terms of the vectors. If they are statistically independent, then they are also uncorrelated, which implies the other property that I mentioned earlier. So these are some of the properties that we have seen earlier, but now they are being restated using the matrix notation. Next, we will take up matrix representation of transforms and then convolution and filtering operations that we will do tomorrow. So thank you for your attention. Today has been a longer day than yesterday, but we have gone through a substantial amount of the background. There's a little bit of background further on matrix representation, and then we go to filters.